My husband shared a joke with me. He attended a seminar in Singapore, and then there was this very powerful speaker with this thing on him. And then after he spoke, that was the break time. So the guys there forgot to turn it off, and he also forgot that he still had it on. So he went to the comfort room and began to and do everything, you know, that we do in the comfort room. And he didn't know that all that time he had the lapel on. Okay, so Jairo, please make sure that after my, you know, message, you turn it off, okay? So this morning, I am going to ask you to help me accomplish our gender and development report to the Commission on Higher Education. In this report that we submit to CHED, we have to list and identify and list some programs and activities that would promote gender equality and sensitivity. So after my message, some students will give you the 1/4 sheet, and then the pencils are here. And if it's okay with you, please identify at least one way in which APNTS can promote gender sensitivity and equality. So I have 2 points in this message. The first is I want to share with you the background why the Commission on Higher Education is serious on this gender and development issue. And the second point is I would share with you what I believe about gender equality and sensitivity based on the Bible. Okay? So the first important thing we need to know as a private higher institution, Higher Education Institution, or HEI, is this CHED Memorandum Order. Okay, so, or the CMO. It's CMO number 1, series of 2015. It is establishing the policies and guidelines on gender and development in the Commission on Higher Education and HEIs. So these are the rationale and mandate. The first is, we have the... Oh, I got it all. Okay. So the first is the 1987 Philippine Constitution. It says, the Philippines being a state party to the United Nations Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women is obligated to pursue and implement programs, projects, and activities that will contribute to the achievement of women's empowerment and gender equality. The second is the Women in Development and Nation Building Act, or Republic Act number 7192. This act reiterates this principle of gender equality and directs all government departments and agencies to review and revise all regulations to remove gender bias therein. And the third one is the Magna Carta of Women, or MCW. This Republic Act is the local translation of the provisions of the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. And CHED is the agency that is mandated by the government to promote these things. So that's why the Magna Carta of Women, number one, is including number one to develop and promote gender-sensitive curriculum. I believe we are currently doing this. In fact, one of our more famous courses is on gender. Dr. Mitch, can you remind me what is the title of that course? Yes. So, Dr. Mitch, our Old Testament professor, taught that with Jerry Gunderson. Number two is develop gender-fair terminologies. And this is included in our Gender Equality and Sensitivity Handbook. We have in one of the appendices of that policy where we need to use gender-fair terminologies. And this policy is available in our website. So we thank Connie Armstrong for posting that for us. The third one is to ensure that educational institutions implement a capacity-building program on gender, peace, human rights education for their officials. So that's faculty and non-teaching staff and personnel. So you are aware that one of the regular programs we have on this is our gender equality and sensitivity policy orientation every semester. Our staff and crew are also aware of this. Our human resource manager, Ms. Kamihares, is a staunch advocate for this. The fourth one in the Magna Carta of Women is to provide partnerships between and among players of the education sector. That's why CHED is asking us to submit our GAD report before the end of this month. And the fifth one is to guarantee that education, yes, institutions provide scholarship programs for marginalized women and girls. So you will notice that my country, the Philippines, really is serious on marginalized women and girls. Because for so long, in my country, we have not extended access to education to this vulnerable part of society, the women and the girls. For many Filipinos, especially in the rural context, if a father were to choose, okay, between a boy or a girl, who will he send to school, he would almost always choose the boy. Because in his mind, the girl would be married, get pregnant, maybe in another order, get pregnant, and then get married, and then take care of babies, and her husband will be responsible for her anyway. But of course, this should not be. That is why this program from the government is a step towards ending this practice among many Filipinos. And I believe this is high time for my country to be doing this. The second point is, I believe the Bible has evidence or contains some principles on gender equality and sensitivity. I know there are portions in the Bible where this is not true. We are aware that in the ancient Judaic biblical times, the people that time had a different view on, for example, inheritance rights. I browsed through EBSCO and I found an article written by Emmanuel O. Nuwaru. He entitled his article, The Case of the Daughters of Zelophehad. I think Dr. Mitch has preached on this. Numbers 27, 1 to 11, and African Inheritance Rights in the Asia Journal of Theology. And in that article, he wrote that the particular character of the Israelite family makes it imperative and creates the strong desire to have a male heir. This has often led to the open paternal preferential treatment of the firstborn son among his brothers and sisters, thus raising no small concern, often with avarice for other prospective heirs. He continues, this is very much reflected in the New Testament, where a man requests Jesus to direct his brother, especially the firstborn, to divide the inheritance with him. That's in Luke 12:13. And in many cases, women's lot was under the whims of the dominant males of the tribe. For instance, Leah had to be given to Jacob first, as was the custom of her day. I am not sure if Leah even protested. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. But in my cultural anthropology class with Dr. Donahue when I was still a student here, one of our projects was to interview people from different cultures on their way of life. I chose to interview Muslim women. As someone from Mindanao, I know that the Muslims were our neighbors, but they always kept to themselves. So I asked some Muslim ladies in Metro Manila about their perspective on marriage. One of the things that I found out was for most Muslim women, they had no choice as to when and who to marry. I asked them, is that good or bad? What they answered shocked me. They explained that they were so used to it that at least for those whom I interviewed, it was no big thing. It has been so ingrained in their system that for many of them, they had trusted their culture so much, they had trusted the process enough to never make that part of their life something to worry about. They think that since it is so common, and therefore, okay. But even in other cultures, not just the Muslim culture, arranged marriages are still part of way of life. I remembered my dorm mate when I was still living in Unit 7. It was the custom of their mission agency to determine who she has to marry. And for her, she was arranged to be married to a guy who is doing his PhD in the United States. My dorm mate was a brilliant and talented woman. She knows that her marriage would have to be arranged, but I felt like she had no qualms about it. But what she and her fiancé shocked us all in Unit 7 was she and her fiancé decided to fall in love first before the denomination marries them. And from that day on, the telephone in Unit 7 was never the same again. It was like it would be in flames 24/7. Back in 1997, APNTS had this speaker system that if you had an outside call, everyone would hear, for example, colon call park, nativity abesha, colon call park. So everyone in the ladies' dorm would be like, Nats, where are you? You have a phone call. But there was one brand new student. He didn't know what a call park is. And the men's dorm that time was in that space in front of Dr. Cunningham's apartment. And so, he heard his name. Call on call park. So he ran all the way from that place to the children's park. You know, the place where there are swings and, you know, near the basketball court. And he was looking, you know, who was calling him on call park. Well, I think maybe if you were also an APNTS student or faculty that time and you have no idea what a call park is, maybe this would happen. The speakers would say, Dr. Daniel Bear, call in call park. Dr. Bear might say, Carly, where in the world is this call park? But of course, Dr. Dan knows about that. So if you want to know more about that, you can ask me after the message or you can ask Dr. Cunningham. He would know because, of course, he's been here like forever. Anyway, going back to my dorm mate. Oh, you have no idea what's a call park. Anyway, going back to my dorm mate, when the speaker would say, Ruth Saushiro, call on call park. So for us, again, that is the end of the world. From that moment on, if you call dorm number 7, you would only hear toot, 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 toot forever for that day. But these calls made them ready for their married life ahead. And the rest is history. They lived happily ever after. We wish that would happen to all the girls in all the world, right? But that's true for Ruth, and that's not true for the other girls in the world. Let us go back to the Bible. We know of maidservants like Bilhah, Zilpa, who were given to their masters as part of the custom of the day. Of course, there are ramifications to this, and we have no time to discuss about that. But for many people like me, for example, I cannot just be married like that, you know? I had to marry someone of my choice and someone who chose me for who I am. And of course, after considering a lot of factors, after listening to God, listening to my sisters, and after crying a thousand rivers. Now you know, I did not marry Pastor Mark without a struggle. But societies like Africa and other parts of the world, they have the same costume. Perhaps we know the story of Memory Banda, no? Memory Banda is a girl from Malawi who pushed her community to pass a bylaw forbidding child marriage. In her community, all the girls go through a practice called Kusa Safumbi. It's a practice of forcing girls into marriage when they begin menstruating. This harmful practice has led, on average, more than 40% of females across Malawi had undergone an initiation of poverty, meaning they were married even if they didn't want to. Memory Banda, on her speech in TEDx, started her speech with a poem written by Eileen Peary, a 13-year-old girl in her community. Peary's powerful words are, I'll marry when I want. My mother can't force me to marry. My father cannot force me to marry. My uncle, my aunt, my brother, or sister cannot force me to marry. No one in the world can force me to marry. I'll marry when I want. Even if you beat me, even if you chase me away, even if you do anything bad to me, I'll marry when I want. I'll marry when I want, but not before I am well educated and not before I am all grown up. I'll marry when I want. And you know what? God is good to Memory Banda. The government listened to her, and the people in her community outlawed child marriage. But Memory Banda was saying, how can we maintain this one with the rest of the world? So this is just Malawi. In Genesis 1 that Adi read, in verse 27, God created human beings. He created them godlike, reflecting God's nature. He created them male and female. Both were created in the Imago Dei. We are the crown of creation, you and me. Sometimes we mistake that the women empowerment in the Philippines is biased because it's only, you know, giving scholarships to women. But of course, you know the background that comes with it. For so long, it's always the men who had it all. So now it's our turn to shine. Dr. Rovina Hatcher, our speaker last Tuesday, wrote a paper entitled Identity Formation Determining Who We Are when we had our Women in Ministry Forum in 2009. She wrote, by the way, that's a painting by Luna. It's the Bulacanya, or the woman from Bulacan. Dr. Hatcher wrote, women are resourceful and creative beings, as created in the image of God, who can think outside the box. Then she quoted the article from Brain, a journal of neurology, that while the concept of left brain and right brain gender differences are not supported in neuroscience, there is support from differences in brain functions between men and women. Whether this is from nature or is learned, it's still unknown. Studies are showing that once activities in some areas do seem to change the development of the brain, and so there is the possibility that nurture or enculturation could make the distinctions within the male and female brain functionings. Then Dr. Hatcher says, these natural identities are often selected by others through social and religious institutions, discourses, and our groups. And I think in one way or another, this is true. Our culture, our stereotypes, and other factors influence the way women think about themselves and the world around them. And that goes for men as well. When we look at Jesus, Jesus put high value not just on men, but also women. Jesus had men and women followers. Jesus healed both women and men. Jesus respected women and men. He allowed them to touch him in the case, for example, of the woman who is bleeding. He asked doubting Thomas to touch his hands. Jesus said to Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. He talked with a Samaritan woman, which was taboo at that time. And he also talked to different kinds of men in the course of this ministry. Jesus is our example of promoting gender equality and sensitivity. Many of us are here in this room because in one way or another, we responded to the call of God in our lives. We serve God and the church utilizing our spiritual gifts. When Jesus pronounced the Great Commission, we assumed that there were women disciples present there. And in the day of Pentecost, there were women there as well in the life of the church. How women served the Lord in John Wesley's time. And for those of us, we know that. In the stories of the Nazarene missionary movement, and even in my own denomination, in fact, in my own denomination, the first woman conference superintendent in Asia was a Filipina. And she is an APNTS alumna. O, diba? She is Reverend Enriquita Monencillo. My denomination ordains women and respects the contribution women make in the ministry. No wonder I call my denomination the only true church, of which Dr. Armstrong agrees to. And this is also why I trust the Church of the Nazarene. Dr. Cunningham, in one of our meetings, wrote the introduction to our gender equality and sensitivity policy. He says, churches in the Wesleyan tradition are rightly proud of their historic stand, allowing women full access to public ministries. Women in the Wesleyan tradition have been on the forefront of campaign against human slavery and child abuse. In various countries around the world, women have led the way in movements against alcohol and in favor of equal rights. Men, according to Dr. Cunningham, have seen women as co-workers of equal dignity and respect. He cites the manual of the Church of the Nazarene, and the manual says, "The purpose of Christ's redemptive work is to set God's creation free from the curse of the fall, and that those who are in Christ are new creations." 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, the manual continues, "In this redemptive community, no human being is to be regarded as inferior on the basis of social status, race, or gender." Paragraph 903.5. That's, I think, very profound. So in that picture, you can see Dr. Cunningham working with women in AJSD realm. This is why I love also the mission and vision of APNDS. We are right on target. Our mission says the Asia Pacific Nazarene Theological Seminary, a graduate school in the Wesleyan tradition, prepares men and women for Christ-like leadership and excellence in ministry. That's why, according to Dr. Im, we are the best and great APNDS, Life of the Cross.